Hi, hello. You're listening to Ben Jones on Radio Winchcombe. Here with you every Friday from 6 till 7, giving you a random mashup of dance and electronic music. This week I've got a very special show for you. In the first half of the show, I'm going to be playing Forest James' new album. And in the second half of the show, I'm going to be playing tracks that have inspired him and the album that's just created. And in between, what's going to happen is I'm going to be having an interview with Forest James, finding out a bit more about him, about the music that he creates, and what music really means to him. I hope that you enjoy it. And wherever you are right now, I want you to turn up and just really embrace the next hour of music. It is a really special show that I hope you'll agree is really good. And I hope that at the end of this inspires you to go find out a bit more about Forest James. And a bit more about just his music in general and ambient electronic music. I hope that you enjoy the next hour of music, and I've put a lot of work into this, so I hope that you'll enjoy it.
What I'm calling, I guess, a dreamwave ambient electronic musician at this point, and, you know, mixing a lot of different sources of what I would say classic era electronica with some pretty contemporary stylings and production techniques, you know, just to try to create as possible authentic electronic music, not necessarily meant for the dance clubs, but, you know, just something that's enjoyable to listen to and possibly intimate.
We'll be right back.
you want to talk a bit about the new album and how it's different to your previous work, and a bit about some of your personal favorite tracks on the album?
The new album, Under the Chrome Sea, is really kind of it is a brain dump of all the influences that I've been gathering with a lot of the musical projects that I've been working on, but in a sort of very focused manner. I think that one of the things that I was doing as an electronic musician and producer that I think we all do is that we have a lot of sound sources, and there's just a lot of possibilities for us as we make music. And with that becomes a lot of confusing choices about like what your sound is. And I think that we all have a style, no matter what we use as a source. But one of the things that I've been thinking about is, as opposed to just making, you know, random electronic tracks where one is sounding quite different than the other, I thought to myself it would be nice to create a sort of like almost like virtual band where I'm like using specific instruments constantly as if they were all alive in my studio, and that's all I had. I really wanted to limit my sound sources. So when I did Understand That This Is a Dream, which was, I would say, the track that kind of got it all started, I was very specific about using specific mini-mode bass sound, you know, thinking about the sort of minimal drum sound, also, you know, a very floaty electronic piano, and inside chaining, so it would pulse and sort of vibrate a bit. And that was the thing that I think sparked me into thinking, you know what, I should do a series of songs that have this vibe.
What are your favorite songs in the album?
When I think about my favorite songs, because I think when I listen back, they all have a very specific time or emotion that's connected to them. When I hear Your Love, Finest Thing, there's something that always makes me really happy about writing that. And I think that that song is really one of those hybrid where I was mixing some of my R&B influences, even if you don't hear them, they're there, with, you know, drum programming and a sense of space. So when that song starts off, you know, it's filtered and it's actually me walking up to my studio. So I was trying to ground it in space, that it, you know, this just doesn't happen, you know, in random sort of bits and bytes and the internet. It's like there's a real place that I connect with, which is my studio in Lynn. And that when I enter and I actually enter the room, you know, music starts actually appearing. And I just, you know, wanted to illustrate that bit. And there's something about that bass line where I actually use a Stingray bass, a bass that I bought, you know, a nice analog real bass, not a synth bass. And there's just something about that song that when it gets going, I just always feel good. And, you know, I wrote it about someone who I feel really strongly about.
Thank you.
For your album, the track names, how are there any stories behind how you get the names to the inspiration for the names? In particular, 1985. That's a bit of an odd choice.
Yeah. Well, that's 1985 comes directly from a sample, which is from Back to the Future. So that is actually a sample, 1985, which, you know, was really based on this time machine, because I think that Under the Chrome Sea was really kind of an homage to me growing up in the 80s. And I intended it that way. You know, I didn't try to hide behind it. I definitely was like, I want to embrace this fact, and I want to embrace the technology that was out at the time and try to make an album from that, you know, from a specific Casio keyboard or to the Lindrum. I really wanted to capture that. So 1985 is based on the sample, and why it's the first track is because I really kind of wanted to set it. You know, I wanted to have like time travel and the thought of like, hey, we're going back here. But, you know, Understand That This Is a Dream is lifted from straight out from Allen Ginsberg's poem of the same name, who I love Allen Ginsberg, and I've always connected to the Beat Poets and, you know, sample from them often. So I guess there's a lot of them that I could talk about, but, you know, Outrun is kind of a very specific reference to the video game Outrun. That was around in the 80s. I always think about my music as like cruising music, and maybe that's just kind of an American sentiment, because, you know, we all, you know, car culture is big here as opposed to Europe, where, you know, it's an unfortunate fact of the US, right? It's like we're always kind of driving everywhere when, you know, and we're going to war for the oil so we could drive more. And it's kind of an irony, right? And Outrun was this sort of, you know, you may know it, but this racing game where you're just cruising with your babe, you know, and it's just kind of funny. So.
Yeah, that's good. When you're writing your music, you've already mentioned how it's a bit of a dream and it's also cruising music. Are there any emotions that you're trying to convey from your music?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very cerebral person, you know, and I'm a designer and I do programming and I work on computers and technology a lot. So for me, you know, getting into a relaxed space, almost a meditative space, is a place that I always write from, because I feel very lucky that I can make music, and that a lot of people don't know how to sort of work out their emotions within themselves And I was always given music as my meditation, you know. And I feel like it's always coming from that space of relaxation. And I always feel that when I'm making music, I don't make music that's like pent up anger or, you know, it's not very aggressive, because I do feel like I'm at peace when I'm making music. So, and it can be a bad thing, you know. I mean, there's times that I would love to make some really aggressive tracks, but because I'm in such a, I would say, you know, like quiet space when I'm making music, that it kind of bars me from doing that.
You've got quite a few British tracks. For you, how has Britain been an influence on you as an artist?
It's been everything to me, to be quite honest. I mean, I feel that there are very specific influences that I have, and they're Black America and pretty much British electronic music, or, you know, UK and, you know, just European electronic music. And it was of a specific era, I will say. I mean, I'm a sort of old school rave kid, which was, you know, kind of a subculture in America that did happen. Obviously not as big as in the UK, but, you know, there are a lot of us here who grew up on drum and bass and jungle and very ambient music and house music. And for me, when I really first started thinking about like music that I could make that made sense to me, was like listening to trip hop in the UK. So like the Bristol sound. And I think that hearing Portishead and hearing Tricky and Massive Attack at a younger age had just a huge influence for me. And then, you know, there was always the sort of classics, like listening to Aphex Twin, listening to Mouse on Mars from Germany. These were big artists and big influences at a time when I couldn't make that music. I had no idea how to make that type of music. I just adored it, you know, Future Sounds of London and just like really heavy dub sound. Say that Understand That This Is a Dream has been very connected to London, actually, because my girlfriend's dad, who was sick at the time, and I wrote that song for him, was in London, you know, and I was writing this as she was in London, and thinking about just sort of influences and thinking about London when I was writing that song. And in 1985, you know, half of that was written in London as well, because I kind of travel back and forth. So I think that the UK is a big influence, not only because of the music that comes out of there, but also that the culture really supports that type of music. And I think that it's difficult thinking about making electronic music as an American artist, because I do think it's there. There is a scene. It's not very well established, and it's not very good, to be quite honest. And, you know, we're still kind of fighting for a spot at the table. And it's funny, yeah, because like I do feel like I harken back to a lot of classic UK tracks, you know. Obviously I'm not riffing off Deadmau5.
Do you have any particular stories behind some of your choices? I mean, I'm very happy that you chose Woods by Bon Iver.
Yeah, so I mean, Bon Iver is a very interesting influence for me, is because I would say I got connected to his music a while back, and it was the Woods song, or it was actually In the Woods that he did with Kanye West, yeah, that I just thought was absolutely brilliant. So as a producer, thinking about, I think for me, Bon Iver is very quiet music. You know, I know someone who has mastered his work, and I think that there's something about dynamics and space that he's on, you know, and he's doing, where everyone is like fighting for loudness and productions and thinking about just how they can just overwhelm a mix. He's really sort of meditative and taking space, and it's very beautiful music. And, you know, the Woods song specifically was one of those that just mixed that sort of quiet sentiment that I think is absolutely beautiful. It's kind of hushed, that you really pulled in. And then just like brilliant production, you know, like this use of the vocoder and just how he's doing it, as opposed to the uber cheese way that so many artists are using it. And that, it just totally struck me with that song. And you know, I of course loved that song existed before Kanye had sampled it and made his version of that song. And for me, listening to both of those versions, just hearing, like, I think Kanye's a totally, you know, genius producer, just hearing how he would interpret that influenced me actually a lot, just how that all worked. So
yeah, well, he does do music similar to James Blake. Do you like James Blake as well?
I actually didn't put James Blake on my inspiration list. because I just thought, like, God, everyone probably puts him on this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's almost too obvious, but I adore James Blake.
The list and explaining a bit behind your choices and why you've chosen them.
As I go through this, you know, there's some interesting diverse choices, and I think, you know, Brian Eno and David Bowie specifically, when I listen to their music and I think about production, I think a lot about how they're composing these just amazing long pieces. You know, especially on the Subterraneans track by Bowie, it's this very ethereal, super long composition, which, you know, it's not conscious of, like, I need to make this a very short song. I mean, it's almost a 6-minute track, which is, you know, it's pretty long for a commercial recording, and just the way that he uses space in that and lets sounds come in and out was something that it's very hard to do as a musician, and I think that it's taken me years to gain the confidence to sort of step back a little bit, allow some space. And I think, you know, Brian Eno's a master of it, where, you know, obviously his ambient influence on all of us, but to do that as a musician does take some maturity. And, you know, I think Bon Iver is, you know, a great example of it as well. I've always been listening to, you know, Eno specifically in thinking about my music, because, you know, when you do ambient style music, you know, you always have Eno in the background, and thinking about how he got to where he was and what some of the struggles he had to gain any sort of recognition in a space that wasn't at all that. And, you know, the XX is just another one of those examples where I feel like they're using space in such a beautiful way. I mean, at times it's almost just hanging on a thread.
It's quite interesting how you chose them from their new album. Do you like their new work then?
I do, and I feel, and it's interesting because, like, obviously I wasn't listening to the new XX when I was making my album, because it didn't exist yet. They had one single out.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Tides, the track that I chose. But I chose Tides specifically because I feel like it embodies everything that I adore about music. You know, it's beautiful songwriting, very hushed as well. But then there's this, like, Jamie XX drum vibe that hits, that it's like, it's hitting, you know, it's like, really kicks, and it kicks in. And I think that the one difference between music that I had been making before and the music that I made on Under the Chrome Sea is that I really started thinking about other musicians that have influenced me, not only just international kind of, like, famous and well-known musicians, but, like, local people who, you know, are around in the North Shore of Boston in Salem area, and who are, you know, writing traditional type songs and being out there and seeing what works, and just thinking about how, you know, electronic music or ambient music isn't just about drone and, you know, just sort of these washes, but it's about going somewhere with your music, you know. And Mike Snow had a big influence on me when I first started working on this album, because he has very simple, or I should say they have very simple, really, like, 3-chord riffs, right? I mean, it's not terribly complicated from a compositional standpoint, but it hits in this beautiful pop way that it becomes like candy to me, but it doesn't feel like cheesy pop. Pyco was one of the inspirations where I felt like when I heard the Dive album first time, I felt like it was like, this is what Boards of Canada might be doing now, or this is a great extension of Boards of Canada, which is, like, a huge influence for me. And it was just so perfect to ride my bike to. I would just constantly ride, you know, with that album. And just I love how it's flowing. And I felt like, you know, there's not many artists who are doing cohesive, beautiful album work like this, that it feels cinematic, very emotional, beautiful sounds. It's just so rich. It's just really, I was just blown away by Tycho, to be quite honest. It just kind of hit me, and the artwork was beautiful. It was just like, yes, this is great. Metronomy, which is kind of a new band for me that I've been checking out, you know, they are like the ultimate bass player band. You know, their bass player is totally fun and awesome to see live. Their music really inspired the sort of like disco bass, you know, and it really inspired me to kind of like get away from just synth bass with like a Moog or whatnot, and really think about, you know, just the energy that you can create with live bass playing. So I was really inspired by that. And also Toro y Moi, who, you know, I saw in Austin years ago, is just like this solo kid performing with his laptop and synth outside in this park, and it was just really beautiful. And then all of a sudden comes up on his second album with, you know, this really almost like live 70s soul and funk sound, but with the electronic and pulsy in it. I was just so sold when I heard that.
If your fans, or the people listening right now, how do they get in touch with you and find out more about your music?
Yeah, so I guess the best way, I would say, is my Bandcamp site. So Forest James, 2 hours in Forest, .bandcamp.com. I mean, that's the greatest way to sort of hear my album, download it, kind of connect with me on my email list, which is great. Obviously, Facebook, you know, which is really great. I do think, though, if you go to Bandcamp and download and, you know, for free, or buy the vinyl album, which I will be getting in a few weeks, that, you know, just getting on my mailing list, I'm really focusing on email. You know, the Facebook thing is great as well, but I really like to sort of talk personally to people. So the email is going to be a lot more intimate, and that would be a better communication experience.
Do you do any live shows or not?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sort of on a hiatus right now because I'm just trying to find, you know, comparable musicians to play out with. But I do like to play live. You know, it's a different experience. I can kind of add a nice live played element. I'm not just behind a laptop by any means. And can really sort of air out the space, and it's just like really beautiful to hear this stuff really loud and cohesive. But I'm also mixing my album stuff with a bunch of other electronic stuff that I'm working on, and, you know, in software like Nano Loop, etc. And I've been pretty connected to the chiptune community here locally, and through chipmusic.org, and trying to release some stuff through them as well and play shows with them. So we'll be right back. Things that I decided up front is that I wanted to make a vinyl record. I didn't want this to just be digital. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One of them is that as a designer and an artist, I wanted a bigger palette to play with. I wanted to design something beautiful or as beautiful as I could make it. And because this was my, you know, really sort of debut album, I've done music with 475, we've released, you know, tons of albums, but it's one of those things where it's like this was a testament to everything that I've learned from others and a lot of the lessons and just a lot of the inspiration that I've learned from others, either people I've never met or just, you know, local musicians that I adore and, you know, think are great inspiration, and put it on a very archival medium. Because I worked in a museum for 11 years and did a lot of work with archives in libraries and, you know, just art in general, I do think about the fact of, like, where is the stuff, where is the art that we make going to end up? And I totally love digital releases. I love the fact that I'm on Spotify and RDO and all those other iTunes, whatever. It's really important that people can get access. But I do love the fact of an object and something special. It's something that really you feel like the artist made as art, you know, that they wanted you to have a great experience with this, and it wasn't just the music. So everything with the vinyl package that I created was like really thoughtfully presented, you know, from the artwork to the colored vinyl to the label on the vinyl up to the weight of the vinyl. It was just something that, for me, I just thought, I want people to listen to this in the comfort of their home and have it a special experience, as opposed to just a digital experience. And I think a lot of us, in the U.S. at least, are kind of hearkening back to that experience where it's like, I listen to vinyl in the morning while having breakfast. It's just like a great time where it's, I'm getting into my day, I'm starting it, putting on a record, and anytime I go to a show and people are selling vinyl, I pick it up because I just feel like it becomes more special to me. It's not just a number. And, you know, I grew up in the era where when I traveled to Europe for the first time, I brought CDs, you know, and like I brought my favorite CDs, and maybe I had 20 total, and I just listened to them for 3 months. And I like that, you know, I like, we're not just a sort of number and a commodity, that there's something actually special.
It's definitely more personal, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's really great. I mean, by no means do I intend to make tons of money off of it. I just think it's a medium, and I, you know, mastered specifically for it and worked with, you know, some amazing engineers to master the album, Jeff Lipton at Peerless, and Maria at Peerless, to like really make this thing sound like something you cannot experience digitally, which, you know, I'm still waiting for it. I'm very excited.
Do you have any personal favorite vinyl record? Because for me, you know, the band Hot Chip, they had a spin-off called New Build, and they created this really great AP, and it's just the art on the front, the just whole vibe about it, and even just the personal number that you get on it, is just really special to me. For you, do you have any particular one?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. There's a bunch of old Portishead albums that I have, in singles, that I just love. They're like white label and just completely mysterious, right? And it added to the air of what I thought Portishead was. It was just this like big, gloomy mystery, which I totally adored. I will say that the Thom Yorke, his solo albums, I just find outstandingly beautiful and meticulously done. I'm sort of a fan of a lot of old jazz records too. Like, I just picked up some West Montgomery stuff on vinyl. It is just some of the most beautiful music to listen to on vinyl. It was an era that, and I prefer 70s music on vinyl, and of course new music that's intended to sort of sound great on vinyl, but I think that in the 70s, especially with a lot of the jazz and soul records, is that it was the apex of engineering. So the equipment was absolutely great, and the engineers knew what they were doing and knew how to get the sound into that medium in the best way. So the records just sound incredible. You know, that is something I tried to match, but it's you can never match that when you're working on digital tools than going to vinyl. It's just, you know, it's a bygone era unless you're in an all analog studio. Something you don't want to hear. I'm gonna show you where it's dark. But have no fear.
I'd like to finish off by saying a huge thank you to Forrest James for taking part in this show tonight. I hope you, wherever you are right now, I hope you've really enjoyed this show. You've been listening to Ben Jones, and this has been the Forrest James special. It's going to be available to listen to again on Mixcloud, and it's also going to be a podcast form. Just search Ben Jones. There's going to be a link to it on Twitter and hopefully Facebook, but you need to look into that. Thank you very much, Forrest James, once again, and I'll be back next week from 6 till 7 with more dance and electronic music. Maybe another interview next week, so make sure you tune in to find out more. Thanks for listening and goodbye. But you're still the same.